Now we have our next speaker. I would like to introduce Paulette C. from La Quinta, California.
Hi, everybody. I'm Paulette. I'm an addict. And I just want to get this out of the way. I'm kind of nervous. And that always helps me not be nervous. So my experience, strength and hope. I was born into a family that was not religious at all. We started out in Europe. We had support. It was this intact family and everything was really great. And then when I was 12 years old, my dad started drinking. And coincidentally, or not, I was 12 and I started smoking cigarettes. And I count nicotine as my first drug because it was really hard to stop. It was one of the harder ones to stop. So I count that as my first drug. And it turns out my drug of choice was anything that would intoxicate me, anything that would change my mood, mind-altering, anything. And I was a bottomless pit. I would take yours, I would sell yours, I would steal your drugs and help you look for them. I would do all those things that we do when we're out there. I made a lot of dangerous choices. I chose dangerous people, places, and things. I learned, and because I was hanging out with all these dangerous people, because I didn't grow up with danger and things like that, a couple of times when I asserted myself and I drew attention to myself, I was given a what for, a violent what for, and I learned how to be small. I learned how to not bring attention to myself. I learned how to go along, to get along, and I became very quiet, and I did whatever it took to get drugs and alcohol. And more about that later. So by the time I was 37, like I had accumulated, stacked up all these traumas, all these pains and hurts, and it was, you know, it was way up there. And I understand now part of the reason it was hard to get clean because I didn't have any skills dealing with those traumas. And the doors were slamming in my face. My family didn't want to be around me. Nobody wanted to be around with me. I had Hep C and I was just a mess. And I went into a treatment and an NA, H&I panel came in there and they started talking about being clean. And they looked and they sounded just like me. And I thought, and I didn't believe them, of course, like nobody could be clean for 30 days by choice. I just didn't think it was possible. But I believed them. At some level, I believed them. And I had this little tiny bit of hope that maybe I had something coming to me other than pain and suffering. Because I had been using for 24 years at that point, almost every day. And in the last 10 years, every day. So I went to my first meeting, got my first book. And at this meeting, I expressed my doubts about God and having a higher power. And this guy, and I wish I would remember his name, but I don't. He was pointing his finger at me and he was yelling at me. And he was, you know, just spit flying everywhere, just telling me, if you don't find God, you're going to die. And I believed him. So I went searching for God. I went searching for this thing that people found so much comfort in. People embraced this idea, and I went searching and searching. I was confirmed and baptized. I joined the choir of the local church. And I was doing all these actions, but I was not feeling it in my heart. Like I was saying, I know many, many people who find great comfort in their higher power, in the God of their understanding. And I respect that. I really do. And I think I needed to do whatever it was so I could stay in Narcotics Anonymous and I didn't need drugs to be okay. So in that process of being small, of doing what other people were doing, not having my own ideas, not drawing attention to myself, I had been giving myself away to other people, to jobs, to school, to my family, to in romantic relationships. Like, I didn't take up any space. It was like, I didn't deserve anything. The credit went to other people. And so this was huge in me, and I found it very difficult to give credit for my hard work in recovery to something that I had yet to feel, touch, or experience. So the beautiful thing about NA is, one of the beautiful things about NA is our literature. And in every reading that we read, that you're welcome in our group with religion or lack of religion. And I had been for about, maybe 5 years or so in recovery. And my clean date is September 17th, 1996. I just had my 29th birthday. One of the beautiful things about NA in our literature is this lack of religion. Like, all I'm required to believe is that recovery is possible, and that our fellowship is a big tent, and there's room for everybody here. Even if you use the word sober, even if you got clean in the other fellowship, you know, all that stuff, we have a big tent. And I love so many things about it, NA, but another one is we are inclusive, and we don't care where you came from, how much you have, how much or how little you have, what you've done in the past, but only in what you want to do about your problem and how we can help. So what I've had to do is find a power greater than myself that's going to work for me. I've had to, you know, and it's not difficult anymore, but the process of finding that, because, like, I had this desire to fit in. Like, I felt kind of embarrassed that I didn't have this white light moment that people had talked about, or this spiritual awakening that people had talked about. I didn't have that. And I was thinking, what the, have we locked us here? I don't even know. What's wrong with me? What's wrong with me? And so I was looking. And like, I did that whole of confirmed and baptized thing. And I just felt like a fraud. I felt like I was lying. I felt like I wasn't being my authentic self. I never talked about my lack of belief in a supernatural being. I never talked about that. I wanted to fit in, and I still had that tendency to be small. Don't stand out. Don't draw attention to yourself. So I did that for a long time. Luckily for me, my first sponsor, it turns out we had similar views on this, and she was secular, I was secular, and I don't remember ever talking about it, but we worked steps together, and there wasn't this push to believe in something that I couldn't see, feel, or touch. But I did work the steps to the best of my ability, and what I've tried to do is think of, what can I call God? What can I do with that and have it be meaningful to me? And so what I've done is G-O-D, group of drug addicts. Like, you are my higher power. The fellowship is what sustains me. When I'm in trouble and I reach out to you, I have never had someone turn me away or ridicule me or make me feel small because I was having an issue, I was having a struggle. You have always come through for me. And I'm deeply, deeply grateful for that. So the only thing that I'm required to have faith in is the program and the ethical principles that come along with this program. Many people call them spiritual principles, the honesty, open-mindedness, and willingness. I've had to adapt my language to fit my nervous system, so I call them ethical principles, but they're the same thing. They're the things that guide my behavior. They're the things that make my life worth living. They've made me a good citizen, a good partner, a good ex-drug addict, a good employee. I give back to my community, and I give back to my fellowship. So what's the other thing I want to talk about? I do believe, the only thing that I need to believe in and have faith in is that recovery is possible. It's possible for me. It's possible for you. it's possible for anybody. And so what I've had to do is adapt the 12 steps, because I'm a step worker. I've worked the steps in NA. I can't even count how many times now, but I've also worked the steps in other programs, because it turns out I have other issues, you know, go figure. I have other issues, like I'm codependent. I have a food issue a lot of the time, like, and especially my codependency, I give myself away. Like, your opinion's better than mine. I have this tendency to be small, and codependency is defined as being other focused. Like, I can be very other focused, and I get lost in that equation, and I barely exist. And I'm a lot better at it than I used to be, because I've had 29 years to practice this. I practice on my family. I practice on my fellow addicts. I practice at work. I practice at school. I practice. And I'm a lot better at it, but my default is still people-pleasing. And so that's my work in progress that I'm working with. So like I said, I'm a step worker. I believe that the solution to all my problems is in the steps. And the steps are a beautiful way of unraveling the complicated mess that I've made of whatever it is that's going on. So step one, I admit that I'm powerless over my addiction. So what does that look like? Write it down. Give me examples of the unmanageability. Sometimes now it's of situations. Before it was like my whole life was an unmanageable mess. Now it's compartmentalized messes. So what is that? Write it down. Be as honest as you can. Tell somebody. Step two for me has become ask for help. Step three has become accept that help without reservation. Step four, you can't really get any better than this one. The only problem I have with step four is the word moral. I'm not immoral. I was never immoral. I was never defective. I don't like that word, but I get what we're trying to do. You know, there's a lot of talk about we have a disease, not a moral failing. So that word being in the fourth step I have a little OCD, and it just makes me a little crazy. So it's not a moral inventory, because I am a moral person. But all the shitty things that I've done to other people. Write them down. I got to write them down, you know, and I get to write down all the shitty things that were done to me, but that comes later. So I write all that stuff down. I'm as honest as I can. I identify my part in that. Like, what is the character defect? Don't like that word either. What is the unskillful behavior that I'm exhibiting? What am I doing that's creating my own problems in my step four? Then I tell somebody in my step five. Step six and seven digs into those unskillful behaviors, but I'm going to identify them. What are they? So I have a fear of making a mistake. I have a fear of being taken advantage of. I have a fear of not having enough. And those are my dominant ones right now, before that list was a lot longer. That's then in step eight. Was that where I am? Yeah, six and seven. Then in step eight, I make a list. Who did I harm? Usually it's in a situation now. Before it was like, you know, everybody I came in contact with. Who did I harm? Write it down, be as honest as I can. Number nine, I'm going to try to make that right. And even if I'm embarrassed, even if I don't want to, sometimes I can put those on hold. But I think the ones that I don't want to are probably the most important ones to make. So I make amends to the people that I've harmed. Step 10, I do a daily thing. And when I blow it, when I make a mistake, I tell you about it. And I got to tell you, people who are new, that gets easier and easier and easier. I don't lose faith. I don't lose face. I don't feel humiliated when I make a mistake, when I do the very human thing of making a mistake. And I come clean right away because, well, personally, I don't want another fourth step. That's huge. I don't want that. So I don't let things stack up like they used to do. So step 11, I stay connected to my source, my group of drug addicts. And in step 12, I carry the message to the addict that still suffers. Sometimes that's an H&I. Sometimes that's in my family. Sometimes that's the guy next door or the homeless person over there. Sometimes it's just being a volunteer. And it's carrying the message and being a good example of what is recovery. What is a person in NA? What does a successful person in NA look like? I hope it looks like me, because I really do my best to be a good person. And that is its own reward. I don't need eternal life. I don't need any sort. I don't even need recognition for that, because my own approval of my behavior is enough for me now. You know, I spent so many years wanting you to like me, wanting you to approve of me, trying to be what I thought you wanted. And that's exhausting. Being my authentic self with my creative higher power needs is me. It's more me. I can be more myself than I've ever been in my life. And NA taught me that. And you let me make mistakes. You let me practice on you and totally blow it. And you let me do all these things. You let me find my way in a way that works for me so it can be meaningful. I've gotten really comfortable with my version of power greater than myself, because a bunch of you are absolutely have more power than I do by myself. So my spirituality is basically my human essence. It's the thing, you know, some people call it a soul. It's the thing that makes me me. It's the thing that makes me unique. It's the thing that makes me Paulette, and that's okay with me today. Oh, thank you. Oh, good. Oh, good. I'm running out of stuff. So the last thing that I want to share is my, okay, so let me back up a little, just a tiny bit of history. I come from a family of educators, this high school dropout, a family of educators. My parents were both teachers. My grandparents were deans. I have an uncle that won a Nobel Prize. I got all this smartness in my family, dropped out of high school. So I went back to school in 1992 when I couldn't find any of the drugs that would make you study all night, and dropped out when I found them, because it turns out that doesn't work. So I wanted to go back to school after I got clean. So I went back in 92, dropped out in 93. I don't remember what year it is, but I'm 66 years old. This was when I was 59. I wanted to go back to school, and I was so afraid. I wanted to get my degree. I'd got my GED. I wanted to get my degree. And you know, the thing that was scaring me was I was afraid I wouldn't be able to find a place to park. That kept me from enrolling in my school, UCI, in California for a couple of years. So I started sharing about it in a meeting, that I was afraid that I wouldn't find a place to park, even though I was kind of embarrassed the first time. And so many people came up to me, or a couple of people came up to me, but one woman said, let's go ride our bikes around the campus. So we rode our bikes around the campus. I found the places to park, and I enrolled, and I graduated with my bachelor's degree when I was 60 years old. So my message is, it's never too late. It's never too late. Don't wait till you're 60. But if you do, it's never too late. Like, being in recovery has taught me self-discipline. I was a really good student. I was a really good studier. You know, I showed up. I did all the assignments. I got A's. Recovery showed me how to show up. It also got me over my fear of public speaking, which I'm very grateful for, because I had to do presentations, and I could do that in a group of my peers, me, the low bottom drug addict, and I was their equal. And that was awesome. So I'm going to keep coming back. Thank you.